This is Katie and Kay Carbondale. Support for GeekSpeak on Katie and Kay comes from Louis the Computer Guy, providing PC and Mac repair, networking support, tutoring, and web design. Secure, informed, and connected. 970-948-7992. I'm your host, Matt McBrayer, from Roaring Fork Help Desk in studio with Louis the Computer Guy. Oh, his microphone's off in space.
Hi, Matt.
There it is. He finally found it. As always, you can call in, ask the geeks any technical questions you're interested in, 970-963-2976.
Sorry about that.
Wow.
Some key components to doing a radio show, and a microphone is one of them.
Certainly one of them.
Yes. But now my microphone stand is all hosed up here.
Flip it over here, Jimmy. Let me mute you for a second here.
No, I got it.
Oh, you got it. Okay, here we go.
Checking 1, 2. Okay, there we go. Good.
So messed up. Z-axis.
Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, there we go. There we go. Okay, technical problems.
Nice. Solved.
Solved.
All right. Did you give the phone number?
Yes, 970-963-2976.
Yes. Call us. We're in the mood to help people fix their printers. Today.
Yes.
We're in, ready to jiggle. So.
Yes, reboot and jiggle.
Yeah. So I was reading before the show about this. It's a malware that affects Google Chrome, I guess. And I guess we should talk about malware in general because, you know, that's I don't know about you, but how many phone calls a week do you get where the answer that you give over the phone is press? I actually have a macro on my phone for it. It's like. And the macro says, press the power button, hold it for 15 seconds, wait 10 seconds, press the button to start to restart normally. That's my spiel when people get malware because.
Yeah, force the computer off.
Yeah.
And then turn it back on and then see if the browser is still taking over.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know, what percentage of the time would you say the browser is still taking over? You know,
well, probably less, certainly less than 5%. And I would
that's exactly the number I was going to go with. Exactly. So, yeah. So, if those of you that are looking for important, helpful tech information, there it is. So yeah. Let's call it a day. No,
yes. Turn it. Have you turned it off and back on again?
Exactly. Yeah. But there's the key. See, that's the thing though. So many people don't know that on a lot of computers, if you press and hold the power button for 4 seconds, it just puts the device to sleep, depending on how your power settings are set up.
Yeah.
And so I get a lot of people where they'll just hold it for a few seconds and then let go and then press it again, and it comes right back to the same malware screen that they were on.
And so the way you can tell typically is the light will be blinking slowly if it's asleep.
Yep.
So basically, you want to hold the power button in a way where you can see the light, and you're going to hold it down until the light just clicks off.
Yeah, and a lot of times there will be an audible, you know, most computers you'll hear the fan go off, or I mean, it'll just basically go from making sound to being really quiet.
Yeah.
So,
although it's with SSDs, it's that's less now because you used to have the click of the hard drive going into park. So you hear the click, and the hard drive would be sending the heads off to the park position.
Exactly.
But now with SSDs, those things don't happen. But a lot of times you do hear the speakers, the amplifying system, and the onboard speakers losing power, and it'll pop.
Yeah, exactly. They'll pop. So, yeah. So there you go. That is how to shut your computer off.
Yeah.
So
it used to be remove the battery. It's like, I can't do that anymore.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of the security settings in Microsoft Windows, and it has actually been like for the last 20 years on Mac, but a lot of the new security settings make it so that it's possible to get what we call drive-by malware when you're out browsing the web. But the difference between malware and drive-by malware is that drive-by malware only lives... There may be like a little temporary file in your download folder or whatever, but it mainly only lives in your computer's memory.
Yeah, so it's living in the browser. And so if you kill the browser, if you can take away, to, if you can kill the browser somehow, the malware hasn't escaped the browser. It's either added a plugin or just that page has done a bunch of things to like make it so it's hard to interact with other parts of the computer.
Yeah. So the piece of malware that we were just talking about that is very popular, is kind of like just hit the streets in the last few days. It's I'm trying to remember what they exactly they called it. But basically what it does is it puts your Chrome browser into full screen mode. And then it disables the escape key and the F11 key. Which are the two keys that you would that you can use to escape full screen mode in Google Chrome. So you're stuck in full screen mode. It's completely taken over your screen. And then a prompt comes up and it asks you to enter your Google credentials, which is basically if you're a Gmail user, that's going to be your email password, which a lot of bad things can happen if somebody gets your email password. So anyway,
and another good reason to have second factor authentication turned on.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because even if they get the password, they still have to get through your second factor authentication. So they still have to get, you know, to an app on your phone, or they have to, mm-hmm. I mean, or they have to get into the email, into the email where they're logged in already, things like that before they can get in there. So,
yeah.
You know, second factor is definitely a tool that would help make this more complicated for the attackers.
Yeah, exactly. So this thing just locks up your screen, and the only way to get out of the lockup is to go ahead and submit those credentials. And then they take those credentials and run with them and make your life living heck, as they say.
Do you know if Control Shift Escape works?
I don't. I didn't see any mention of that in the article. It just basically talked about F11 and Escape. So, yeah.
Because Control Shift Escape will bring up Task Manager, so you could kill.
Oh, there you go. Yeah,
you could kill Chrome.
Mm-hmm.
That might be a way to do it, or just power off your computer and power it back on.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, so the ultimate solution really is to just press the power button until the computer just shuts off. It's another really good reason to save early and save often, you know, so if you're working on a Microsoft Word document or something like that, and then you decide to, you know, switch over and, you know, see what the current going price on pork bellies is today. And then your Chrome browser gets locked up. Then if you have to hold the power button down, then you're going to lose any unsaved changes in your Word, program. So, when's the last time you tried to recover something from auto recover on Microsoft Word? I mean, is that technology got any better? I gave up on it years ago after a bunch of monkeying around.
You know, I don't know because I switched to LibreOffice probably 15 years ago.
Okay.
And its auto recovery feature is pretty darn near 100%.
Okay. Good.
You know, I mean, you make sure basically you just, if you're doing something new, you just make sure you save it.
Uh-huh.
And it'll do the untitled ones pretty well, but I've had more luck with, you know, so you start writing a document, so you just name the document, hit save, and then, you know, then the computer crashes or, you know, something, or LibreOffice crashes or something, and it comes back up and says, hey, here, there's an unrecovered file here. You want to bring it back? And, you know, usually you've only lost, you know, 5 minutes or something. And you can change the set. You can change that to be a few minutes or less.
Got it. Yeah.
I've had great success with LibreOffice's document recovery tool.
Got it. What would you say is one of the, I know we're just like totally going like stream of consciousness here, but what would you say is one of the biggest drawbacks to LibreOffice or OpenOffice? What are there any things that it won't do for you that you end up like having to switch to some other word processing program or whatever?
I'm trying to think. I mean, I think the biggest difference at this point is the interface is the interface is still kind of, if you don't turn on the, it does have a version of the, what's the one on the ribbon interface.
Uh-huh.
So it's a little more old school. It's a little more menu driven.
That's true. It's more like, Word 2009.
Would be 2003 because 2007 was the first ribbon.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
It's been that long?
It's been that long since we started ribbon.
That's years of suffering. Holy moly. Oh. That's 18 years. So, yeah.
So here I have a document that's broken right now. So I'll just start recovery.
Okay, cool.
And there it is, and it's back.
All right, nice.
So I was just going to see how hard it is to change, how much it looks like the ribbon interface that you're, because you know, some of my clients have give me Word and Excel, and I use them when I have to, but I don't. But it's more for like interface. It's more like the collaboration part of it than the word processing part of it.
Yeah. So have you ever used? Have you ever tried to do mail merge in LibreOffice?
Many years ago, yes, because I had a CSV that had a bunch of mail things, and
mail recipient data, email recipient data.
Yeah, okay. I was doing physical mail in this case.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. That is a feature.
That is a thing.
Yeah. That's actually what it's for. Thank you.
Yeah, because I had a database, a CSV file of a bunch of names and addresses and things and a form letter that needed to go out. So I was able to, connect the two and have it place those fields into the letter at the appropriate places and, and then run a print job that had all the form letters with the appropriate things on the on the output.
Was it pretty straightforward, just like in the Microsoft world?
It's been so long, I can't really.
Okay.
I remember there's a little bit of finagling, but I think that may have just been something I'm not familiar with. I don't do that thing very, it's like I haven't done it in 10 years.
Exactly.
So.
And it's interesting to me. We seem to get a lot less call. That used to be,
that used to be a thing.
That used to be a slice of pie on the revenue chart on a monthly basis, helping people with mail merge. and for you listeners who don't know, mail merge is a system where you can create a spreadsheet with first name, last name, street address, city, state, zip code. And you can put in a few other things like greeting or, whatever. And then you can attach that map it to a special word processing document that has fields that connect to those different pieces of data. And you can basically blast out, 50 letters to a 50-person list in no time at all. And then all you got to do is come up with the money for the postage. So... anyway,
or attach it to your, or attach it to Thunderbird or Outlook and have it send it out through your mail client.
There you go. 970-963-2976. Anybody wants to call and tell us about some cool new tech stuff that you have learned about. If you got something broken, we will do our best to help you walk you through fixing it. And anything else you want to talk about? Except for the Broncos.
I've been working on password, cracking password hashes the last week. That's been that was my thing last week. So I've been busy on learning how to extract them from the computer and, plug them into a tool that basically says, is the password 1? Is the password 2? Is the password 3?
Yeah.
I'm doing that in the order of a billion times a second.
That is impressive. Yes.
On a mid-range computer, that's pretty amazing that you can.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Can do that.
Yep. Let's see what else is going on. What else is hot today? What's going on in AI these days?
Well, there's been I think over the last month or so, there's been a bunch of. What do we call those large language model? The next version, I think.
Yeah,
OpenAI is coming out soon. I think Grok 2, which is Elon Musk's thing. I think that one came out in the last month, and then there's like two other ones that I saw.
Because OpenAI was like really tooting their horn a couple days ago. They're like, "Oh man, our new model is it's bomb daddy. It's like it's a human being. It's a human being in a can." So and. I haven't had a chance to play around with that, though, yet. I guess one of the things that I wanted to kind of touch on a little bit is, and I know we're kind of maybe beating a dead horse here or revisiting something we've already talked about, but it used to be there was all this mania about the cloud, and nobody really knew what the cloud was, and as soon as, I'd have people who had been on Gmail for 15 years
go, well, I'm not going to the cloud, man. And I'm like,
you're already there.
Well, I got news for you. You're already there. You're already settled in. You've already arranged the furniture. And, you know, so the cloud became this thing that that was being vilified, you know, because you get a couple of news stories floating around out there about how somebody's cloud account got hacked, which is really like the most glib and like, I don't know, just generic statement. My cloud account got hacked. I mean, it's like, what does that mean?
Yeah, is that on Google? Is that on AWS?
Yeah, exactly.
Is that on
what kind of data got stolen? Did your apps get hijacked? Did it? You know, it's like, yeah. And so you know, everybody loved to you know go on about that, and now the new version has become AI. You know, and everybody's so afraid that AI is just going to change the complete. And, you know, here I am 20 years from now, I may be going, wow, I was really wrong about that. It's really changed life. You know, it's really messed it up or it's really made it good or, you know, but, you know, I'm going to say right now, it's just another database application. It's just a really big one, you know, and it searches a database of, you know, these large language, you know, this large language data that's been trained into this, you know, application. And it's just a matter of, it uses a lot more processing power and it's able to act kind of human, you know, in a lot of cases. It's, have you played with any of the online, you know, 'cause I know we, at one point we talked about having one on the show with us.
No, I haven't played with any of the you know, what do you call those, online girlfriends or the AI girlfriend? I don't know what you call them, but
they have AI companions.
Companions,
they have
all kinds of stuff.
AI girlfriends.
And I haven't really,
you know, you can even hire somebody, an AI troll, to be mean to you if they are into that kind of thing. Yes. It's, you know, it'll satisfy any human need, you know, pretty much.
And, you know, the one I've been using one called Perplexly.
Okay.
And I don't know a lot about it. I just ask it, you know, random questions that I sort of know the answer to or kind of have an idea mm-hmm. what the answer is.
Okay.
And then see if its response aligns with my preconceptions or
okay.
you know, previous knowledge on the topic and kind mm-hmm. of see where it lines up. I would really like to spend some time testing political facets of mm-hmm. the of AI and see how the creators of the AI have either knowingly or subconsciously skewed the 'cause it's all basically statistical analysis.
Yeah.
You know, how have they skewed the AI's analysis mm-hmm. of a particular topic, particularly ones yeah. that are of political interest?
Well, doesn't it really come down to like what kind of data it's been ingesting? I mean, you know,
yeah. There's a whole bunch of pieces to that, and that's yeah. among one yeah. of many.
Looks like we got a call.
Right. You're on with the geeks.
Hey, was it Louis who said to talk about printers?
We can talk about printers.
Always.
All right. I love this one. So we came home from Taos, New Mexico, and I went to print something, and the printer says an HP 9-something, 91500 or something, and it says carriage jam. And I've done everything but smash the thing to get the carriage to come and work.
Okay. And does it, like when you first start it up, does it make any unusual sounds?
No, it makes a regular sound. And, you know, it just says the print cartridge cannot move, open the cartridge, access, and, you know, clear anything. Of course, there's nothing there.
Yeah.
And I went on the HP website, it is the printer doctor, all that. In fact, it comes up, oh, your printer cartridge is jammed. I'm going, yeah, I know that.
Yeah, wow. Thanks for enlightening me about that. So can you physically move the cartridge? And I'm not saying you should get like too physical with it, but will it physically move when you open it up? Can you move it?
No, it's stuck in one position. I jiggled it like they said to do on HP, you know, help and all that.
Mm-hmm.
It's all connected. There's nothing, you know, because when you open up the area, there's nothing that could be jammed in there because there's no paper that goes there and nothing else. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm going to give you some really unuseful information.
Go and buy a new one?
Well, that's where it leads, yeah. But
you just have to start checking the entire the entire run where the paper goes. So just start where the paper feed is. Make sure there's no paper there. I mean, it sounds like there's probably a piece of paper that's jammed in the printhead section. And it can be very small. It can be a postage stamp or smaller.
Yeah, I've seen
if it's jammed in the sensor where the sensor is, it can be very small. Where that paper, it's a very small piece of paper that's jammed in there. You got to look pretty closely with a pretty bright light, along that entire section where the printhead moves along, and make sure that there's nothing in there.
Yeah. So.
All right. That'll be my next before. I go get a new one.
Yeah, that'll be a really good start. And I can honestly say about 85% of the time there's something along the lines of what Matt's talking about. Yeah. And it'll be just a little, sometimes it's something about, like you said, about the size of a postage stamp or smaller. Sometimes it'll be kind of wadded up and like jammed back by one of the rollers or something. I would just say remove all the paper from it.
Get it
out in the open, maybe even turn it upside down and shake it. See what falls out.
If you can take the printer cartridges out, take the printer cartridges out and look under them because there's probably a little itty bitty piece of paper, and like you said, it could be rolled up into a little, a little ball basically, where it's jammed in exactly the wrong spot basically.
Yeah.
I'd take all the hatches off. Check everywhere that the paper goes. Mm-hmm. I would check and see if there's anything in any of those that are.
Yeah.
But I'm going to guess that it's probably a little postage size thing that's rolled up and crinkled in one of the in the corner on the right hand side, right. Probably.
Yeah. And maybe blast it out with some spray air as well.
We did spray air. We took the paper out, and we can't even get to the ink cartridge because it's all the way to the right.
So this will be
a project for me to do on the driveway, because you know what's going to come next.
Yeah. I had somebody tell me the other day, they said there's two different kinds of technology people. There's the ones that, are like, hey, I got a whole bunch of really cool devices and I got them all interconnected and they're all talking to each other and they're all doing this, that, and this, the other thing, And the other one is the one that has a printer that has a baseball bat sitting right next to it. So.
Yeah. It may require a little bit of percussive maintenance.
Yes.
Well, yeah. On another topic, you're probably going to say it's old school. So one of our TVs that we have, an HDMI or whatever it is, we have plugins for our old CD player or DVD player that are the RGB type of plugs.
Yeah, yeah.
And we got a new TV, and the back of the new TV doesn't have any of those plugs anymore.
Ah, okay.
Does that mean the old school DVD player is just going to work on the older TV?
No, it means you need to get on Amazon and get a RGB to HDMI converter. There is such a thing, and I can't remember if that's one of the ones that there are a lot of those converters are like in the teens and 20s for price. Uh-huh. And then some of them actually have to perform some electronical operations on the signal, and those will be like up in the low hundreds. So, in which case you could probably replace the DVD player for a third cost.
I would say just go to a well reviewed Blu-ray player that has HDMI.
There you go.
At that point,
there you go.
You'll have to decide which one makes sense at night, because I know that there's some cool analog converters, because that's basically converting an analog signal to a digital HDMI signal. There's a bunch of cool ones, and like Louis said, there's ones in the hundreds of dollars that will take that low quality. So they'll I was looking for a Super Nintendo. It'll take the low quality Super Nintendo and
use high res and
scale it properly to 4K. I think the one that does that, I think, is like $300. But if you're playing an old school system, that's the way to do it. But you just have to decide which one makes the most sense for you.
All right.
Thanks, you guys.
Hey, thanks for the call. Take care, man.
All right. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
All right. Well, I'd say we have a few more minutes, but we don't.
We don't have much time. Got about 90 seconds.
Yeah, what's going on with Bitcoin right now? That's a good thing to talk about in two seconds.
I don't know. I've just been following the following stocks. That's what I do. I don't follow the Bitcoin very much.
All right, got
it. Let's see if the Bitcoin ETF I follow. Let me see if it's up or down. Let's see here. Where is
it's at almost $58,000 right now for one Bitcoin, and.
Oh, it's doing the same thing the stocks are doing. Okay.
Yeah.
Just kind of slowly going down.
What a shock. What a surprise. So, very good. Let's see. What else is going on out there?
It's kind of a quiet day for...
It's been a slow news day on the tech news front, for sure.
Looks like you can install Ubuntu on ARM64, which is so if you have a Snapdragon, Lenovo, ThinkPad, X13S... you can run Ubuntu on it now.
That was a spectacular string of highly technical words, Matt. Thank you for that.
Well,
it's like my eyes are fully glossed over.
Excellent.
At this point. It's like, I'm like, could you write that down so I can go home and do it?
Well, you got to go get a new laptop with an ARM processor and put Linux on it.
Oh, you meant like not? You don't mean like my left arm? So
no.
It's like, yeah. Anyway, that was a dad joke if I ever heard one.
All right. So. You've been listening to Geek Speak on KDNK. I'm your host, Matt McGreer from Roaring Fork Help Desk in studio with Louie the Computer Guy.
Hey, thanks a lot, Matt.
You're welcome. We'll be back October 7th.
Woohoo. October. Wow. That sounds final. It sounds progressive.
It sounds third quarter.
So, all right. Quarter. Hey, thanks for listening, folks. And don't touch your knob.